This is the Tom Likas Show.
Well, she's not crying. You're not doing it right.
Now, from the New Normal Studios in Burbank.
I see a bleach.
Tom Likas.
Thank you for tuning into the Tom Likas Show. This is where you hear us live, Monday through Friday, 3 p.m. Pacific time, 6 p.m. Eastern time, 24-7 at tom.go. You can hear us on our free app. Get it at the App Store. Get it at Google Play. Or get it at tomeverywhere.com. It's tomeverywhere.com. Thank you for tuning in. Thanks for being a part of the program. We appreciate it. Here we are together again, you and me, a bonus hour of the Tom Likas Show. And joining us right now is our friend, criminal defense attorney, Adam Sachs. Adam, always a pleasure.
Good evening, Tom. How are you?
But before we get to anything, Facebook Live, did you want to weigh in on our friend Steve Stevens?
I think I work
with Steve Stevens at that Top 40 format in Biloxi, Mississippi. He did the morning show. Steve
is that
Stevens.
A fact?
No, it isn't.
I don't know if it was the same guy, Tom.
That's right.
You know, Tom, before we talk about this particular one, my understanding is that Facebook Live has already had all sorts of adventures. And I think there are some examples from Europe, I think, of rapes and gang rapes being posted on Facebook Live.
Yes, there have been people being tortured. And
The torture one I saw.
They had some kid locked in a room, and they were just beating the crap out of him.
Oh, that's great.
But he wasn't murdered. He lived.
Excellent.
And was live on Facebook.
Well, I mean, I definitely want to talk about the dangers of social media, and Facebook is right in the center of that. But for me, Tom, right now I'm in Facebook jail. So that's happened to me a few times. So
Me too. I
don't know that I can give my personal experience right now because my account is locked. But apparently, leading up to France's presidential election, Facebook killed 30,000 accounts related to one of the candidates that apparently they don't really dig. And you know, Tom, that there was a whole thing with YouTube, which is sort of related, that, for example, if you were an advertiser on YouTube, you don't know necessarily what videos you're going to be put in front of. And there are some people that have what are considered like fascist or extreme right-wing videos and whatnot. And, you know, they were starting them out with Pepsi or other brands that then found out that they were sponsoring them and weren't very happy about it, apparently. And so this is like the new world order or whatever. And Gary has been talking to me for a while about revenge porn, which is something that is actually now been specifically made illegal. And this is where people have videos, usually kind of like the Paris Hilton type thing, where you and your girlfriend make a video of sex or whatever, and it's all done for fun. But then later on, you know, as life goes, you break up, and someone wants to get even with someone else. And, one time they used to send it to the parents or whatever, but I guess now the new, more exciting thing to do is to post it on social media so that the whole world can see it or whatever. And there's some statistic I was reading about some of these videos, like the one of Kim Kardashian, which I don't think was an accident, gets downloaded like once every 10 seconds or something like that worldwide.
Yeah.
So people just can't get enough of this. Now, I live in the San Fernando Valley, and I've lived here for many years. This is where I live in California. And it's a little less so now, but for a very long time, the San Fernando Valley was the center of porn production in the United States. This has just changed a bit because they started making more rules, in particular wanting them to wear condoms when they were making the porn, which turned the audience off, apparently. And so a lot of porn has gone to other states or whatever. But one of the biggest shocks of my life when I first lived here was when I was in the supermarket and I started recognizing people. Like, I recognized this woman, you know, in the vegetable section. And I'm looking at her, and I'm like, how do I know this person? I mean, I absolutely recognize her. I mean, there's no two ways about it. And I'm trying to figure out, like, friend of a friend, or I know her from school or whatever. And I realize after, you know, staring at her for too long, that I've been, you know, looking at her the week before in a very hardcore porn video, and, you know, I haven't seen her with her clothes on before. And, you know, she was getting it by, like, three black guys or whatever, and here she is in the supermarket, like, with one of her kids or whatever. So this is one of the anomalies of California. And one of the things that that is really true, no matter what, is that, you know, porn is best made by the professionals. I think that's the reality. When you post your own videos, your girlfriend, and you made and you post them or whatever, you're definitely asking for it, because it's going to end up very unfortunate. Because of our society's ever-present concern for protection of females, there have been now a lot of laws passed, very specific to revenge porn and to posting revenge porn. And if you do that, it's going to come back to you, and it's like very quickly becomes a felony. And social media in general is very, very laden with problems. There's no doubt about it. It's incredible how many divorce cases and criminal cases now end up having part of the evidence be from social media. For example, today there was a shooting in Fresno. And the guy who shot several people, killed people, said Allah Akbar or something like that when he was doing the shooting, so they don't know if it's terrorism. And the first thing you hear is that he had posted threatening messages on his social media. And I've done many, many cases in divorces now where the husband says he's broke, he can't pay child support or whatever, and the other side, sometimes it's my side or sometimes it's, you know, whatever, posts a picture which they got from Facebook of him on an expensive vacation at a very deluxe hotel or doing some ostentatious thing like driving a brand new car, which is expensive or whatever, meant to contradict his claim that he's broke. And a lot of these things are coming out of social media. And when it comes to employment now, it's absolutely unbelievable because, you know, these companies, in general, especially larger companies, but any company now is petrified of being sued by their employees or hiring a crazy person who ends up giving them a lot of problems or whatever. And so they do very comprehensive background checks on people. And if you're into some kind of sexual naughtiness, a deviance, or you're doing whatever crazy thing you're into, and you're stupid enough to post it on social media, you know, you go work for this conservative company, their human resources department is going to check your social media, and they're going to find this, you know, picture of you kissing another man or whatever. It's going to end up, you know, changing their perspective on you. And it's really drifted where, you know, a lot of the social media stuff, people were posting pictures of their cats or whatever, or they're posting pictures of their food. There's so many pictures of people. I don't know what that's about, that are about to dig into something and take, you know, these pictures of it. And by the way, Tom, you've had some nice pictures of steaks and whatnot and the certain wines you're going to put on. And these are,
yep,
these are much more mundane. These are people that are about to eat a TV dinner or whatever, and they're posting it like it's really important, you know? And that's in the past. Now people are posting really intimate things. And, you know, one of the really strange aspects, particularly when you look at the way computers are set up today and networks and storage and everything, is that when you put something out in the public, it never comes back. So there's really no way to kill it. And there's always this classic comment now of the president or someone else posted this, you know, some obnoxious, you know, tweet or whatever, and then deleted it. But see, that doesn't help you, because it's already been copied and retweeted, and people store it, and the system stores it, and there's no way to undo things anymore. And, you know, people have to be more aware of their circumstances. And it's certainly a sign of the times where we started this, Tom, this guy who just shot someone dead for no reason, basically a thrill kill or whatever, and he did it live on Facebook. And, it, you know, they're making this big corporate comment how concerned they are about this and how they're going to try to prevent it or whatever. But as you've observed, Tom, there's really no way to prevent that in terms of the fact that you have this service and it's live and it's streaming. You know, if like we said, we've seen these rapes and other crimes and torture of someone or whatever. You know, it might be possible to do some kind of monitoring that once the video is live and things are going wrong, that somehow they're observing it or they cut it off or they turn it off or they do something. But, I mean, even that would be very difficult to do, and that probably requires some kind of human intervention and human monitoring of an extremely large number of things, because obviously there's so many of these channels around. But on the other hand, doing some kind of anticipation thing where you prevent someone from posting something violent or a murder or whatever, I mean, it's just like these things we were talking about with the freeway shooting, suicide, and there was a famous case of a guy who was... he was on some kind of legislative committee, and he just suddenly was giving a press conference and whipped out a gun and shot himself. And there's really no way to stop that. I mean, the things that we do, for example, on the New Normal and other radio type things where they have a delay, or there's a, you know, television does this with certain sporting things or whatever. They have a 20-second delay or a 10-second delay. You know, that has to be carefully monitored by someone human who stands there, and that would be, in our case, would be Mike. And if something, you know, goes wrong, you press the button for the delay, or you cut it off, or whatever you do. And, you know, that requires a human consideration, someone who's listening and monitoring and knows what they're, you know, concerned about, you know, preventing going out. And, you know, that would be on every channel, on everything on Facebook Live and YouTube and so forth. It's just probably physically impossible. When you look at the way law is now, there's a couple of statistics that they've been talking about where, for example, apparently in California and Los Angeles and some of the big cities, the amount of arrests is actually way down. And there's definitely been some kind of pressure. Apparently this was brought to bear, for example, in Baltimore, where there was this terrible incident where someone was killed and the police were accused of manslaughter or murdering him or whatever, or they put him in some kind of a police transport van and didn't lock him in, so he broke his neck or something or hurt his back and died. And the impact of that is that the police were charged, and that puts shockwaves through the police and their community, and they start saying, you know, why should we, you know, knock ourselves out doing risky things trying to arrest people when, you know, the government and the mayor and the prosecutors don't stand behind us. And so that ends up having an effect where the community gets policed in a less aggressive way, and there's less people being arrested and so forth. And so if you look at police resources, they're diverted into other kinds of crimes very often. And, for example, in some of the European countries like the United Kingdom and France and Germany, there are now very large forces, like many, many officers whose job it is to monitor the internet. And so, for example, in England, there's a whole, like, unit of 1,000 officers or something ridiculous that is monitoring Facebook and monitoring Twitter and some of the other social network sites. And if someone in the United Kingdom posts something that's offensive or that's considered, you know, threatening, particularly to certain designated minorities like Muslims or women or whatever, literally that person will be traced and will get a knock on their door from the police, and they'll be arrested to certain levels of getting some kind of a warning or a re-education or something, or having to take anger classes. And if it's more serious, they'll be charged, you know, and convicted in court of serious misdemeanors, or if not felonies, of what are called hate crimes. And so if the diversion of the energy of the police is transferred from what you would call regular crimes, like, you know, out in the world, you know, assault and rape and attempted murder or whatever, domestic violence, if that stuff gets diverted and they start, you know, charging people essentially with thought crimes or hate crimes, which is sort of this infringement on someone else's rights or hurting someone's feelings or saying something mean about someone, that this is sort of the new era. And so, you know, I've been surprised myself where I've had people comment to me, literally, I wouldn't hire a lawyer who wrote X on social media. Or I don't want to hire a lawyer that's associated with some hateful radio show, which is referring to the new normal, that, you know, that we're a bunch of misogynists or whatever, and so they wouldn't want to hire me, so I'm associated with that, which, to be honest, I wear as a badge of honor. But you'd be surprised that when you talk about, as you've often said, Tom, especially corporations and especially larger ones that are owned by some hedge fund or whatever, you know, they want to maximize their profits. They want to get every penny. And so they don't want to be associated with any controversy. And anything that's going to alienate any customer anywhere is very worrisome to them. And so they're ultra sensitive to, you know, if they're somehow been associated directly or indirectly on social media or anywhere else with something that they consider, you know, even slightly offensive or dangerously offensive in some way, that it's going to turn off one person in some small town somewhere, they're really sensitive to that. And people today are much more attuned to writing letters and to getting signatures. And there's actually calculations, which are interesting. And this really relates to these sort of media handling companies and these consultant companies. One of the things that the police and judges and whatnot assume when you get a DUI, there's actually some analysis of this in some university studies, that when you get a DUI, when you've been arrested for DUI, that is probably the 25th or 30th time that you've driven drunk. So when the judge looks at you and you have your DUI, he assumes that most likely you've driven drunk many, many other times but not been caught. And when you write a letter, for example, complaining about something on media, or you get signatures or whatever, when they receive a letter from someone who says, I'm never going to watch the NFL again because I'm so offended by what happened and so forth in the halftime show or whatever, they presume that one letter actually represents thousands of people that didn't write. So in other words, they probably figure in their mind that, you know, 2,000 people were offended, but only one of them wrote a letter. So that's the letter that they got, but that letter echoes among many, many other people. And this is something that is not to be underestimated. And what Gary and I were talking about in terms of particularly revenge porn and some of these other factors, I have to say that as fun as it is and how spontaneous as it can be, people are posting things on social media, you have to really think about what you're doing. And in a lot of ways, these are things that should be used very sparingly. I mean, if you're someone who's, you know, got your own company, and you have, you know, customers that are, you know, secure to you, whatever, which doesn't sound like a very common thing, that you're, you know, totally locked into your business and independently wealthy. If you have anything to lose, and if you work for any kind of company that has an image to project, which is everyone, you know, you have to be really aware of doing anything that is even slightly offline, because, you know, this is something that happens now. And for example, when you look at some of the left side of politics now, where they go after people that they don't agree with, and you've seen that in some political situations where the National Security Advisor, that's Flynn, certain facts about him got out, things that he had done in his past dealing with a Russian ambassador or something, and he was, you know, made to resign. That's an extreme example, obviously, at the highest level of government. But there are definitely things now where certain professors, for example, are expressing certain opinions that people don't like or they don't want to hear. And this is not the same as it once was, where he would have just been debated. You know, now, for example, from Milo Yiannopoulos, they went into his records and things on the internet, and they found an interview that he had given years ago that no one really paid attention to. And, you know, part of what he said at one point kind of taken out of context in some way, but he was basically saying that it was okay to have gay sex with someone who was under 18 if they were physically mature. So, voila, that becomes that he agrees that being a pedophile is okay, because he kind of suggested that it was okay to have sex with someone under 18, which is a child. So, you know, that was something that made him lose his job, and it derailed a lot of the public stuff that he was doing, and it discredited him. And every time you see him in the news now, they say, blah, 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 disgraced columnist, Milo Yiannopoulos, blah, blah, because what they're saying is that, you know, he's been disgraced. Everything he says sort of has a cloud over it now. And, you know, if you're in any kind of a job, the things are different. You're not necessarily part of a team. You'd be very surprised that some of the other people in the office and in your, you know, section or unit of your company or whatever, a lot of these people may smile in your face, but the truth is they may really actually hate you, and they would love to dig something up. I've heard it said many times, Tom, you've had a lot of listeners over the years call in and say, you know, I'd love you to run for senator or something like that. And you know, you said, well, considering the shit that I've done, I don't know if that's such a good idea, you know?
Right.
I mean, we love you, Tom, but, you know, and you've been, you know, by the way, you're not this person that's going to get ambushed because, you know, there's no shocks because you've always told the things you've done. You've always been open about it, which is great. But at the same time, when you run for Senate, you know, you got to be, in a way, non-controversial. You got to get votes from John Q. Citizen in the rural part of your state. And he may be
By the way, that was always the belief, but look who is the president now, and look at the trail of stuff he's done and said over the years.
Well, so you're right.
That may not be true anymore. It was true, but it may not be anymore.
Well, him being elected certainly challenges a lot of the political assumptions, let's just say. You know, one of the things that came out about him, and it's the same kind of conversation about, you're talking about President Trump, of course, he made that video with Bush, where he had the microphone on and he forgot or whatever, and he was talking about that's where they got that grab him by the pussy thing that he, you know, apparently said, you know, in a private conversation, but it was recorded. And, you know, I think the thinking at the time, you know, when it happened was, well, that's the end of him. You know, there's no way he can succeed. There's no way he can be president. And it's amazing, you know, how things have changed, what the public is capable of absorbing. I remember years ago, when I was pretty young, I was talking to my mother about something, and she was telling me, because my parents were divorced, and she said, you know, I wonder if we'll ever be able to have a president that was divorced. And believe it or not, the first president that ever was divorced was Ronald Reagan. And that kind of went into something at the time, which sort of, by then it wasn't such a big deal, I guess, and people were willing to deal with that. And since then, you know, you've had Barack Obama, who admitted that he smoked marijuana and used cocaine. And we've had a whole range of things like that. And Trump, you know, I think has been divorced three or four times or whatever. But the thing is that, you know, you see how society sort of has this kind of drifting social moray, where something that would have been a big deal at one juncture in history, perhaps later on, isn't such a big deal. And, you know, we've had all kinds of crazy stuff. I mean, President Jefferson, I think he had his slave as his girlfriend, and I think she lived in the White House with him. So that's even, who knows what the hell that's all about. But that was, you know, hundreds of years ago. So obviously the voters are willing to tolerate all sorts of strange things. But I think that as crazy as it is, people don't recognize that these things are not going to play well in the workplace, that's for sure. And when it comes to you being judged in the criminal realm in terms of sentencing, in terms of your convictions and being discredited, and certainly in family law in terms of custody and visitation and so forth, if you've got a boatload of crazy shit out there on the internet, it's going to come and bite you. There's no doubt about it. And it has been raised, as I said, again, with revenge porn, where you may be angry at a woman at some point. And I've had a lot of guys tell me this. I've got video. I'm going to post it. And I'm like, dude, please don't do that. That's not a good idea. And as angry as you are at someone and then you want revenge on your ex-girlfriend, you know, if you post that video about her, you know, that, first of all, the things that you do on the internet are not anonymous at all. People said that always, you know, the trolls and anonymity and, you know, unless you're very, very careful and you use these virtual networks and you're really very savvy about this, most of the things that you do on the internet can be traced very quickly back to you. first of all, if you have an account, you logged in or whatever. But even so, when you use the internet, the computers that you're logging into recognize where you're contacting from. That's called your IP address. And it's very possible to trace things back to you. So if there's a video and you have, like I said, and you post it or some negative pictures or whatever they are, particularly about a romantic partner, that's going to come back to you and bite you. And that's there's just no two ways about it. And I think that porn is, as I said, best left to the professionals. And in general, when you look at social media, you know, was meant to be something positive and so forth, and it's, you know, it's people interacting on the internet. It's actually been shown to cause a lot of conflict. It's shown to be the people using it to be depressed. I mean, I've got 2,000 fans or something like that, 2,000 friends, I should say, on Facebook. And, you know, these are not really my friends. You know, let's face it. People say, oh, no, I've got all these friends and everyone being social with. That's not really true. I mean, a lot of those people, you know, and you, Tom, you were saying this many times, that you were culling the people that you had as friends or whatever. I mean,
oh, yeah.
Come on, let's face it. I mean, you're my friend and all, and I'm your Facebook friend, but we actually know each other, you know. There's a lot of names on my list, Tom, that I don't know who they are, you know. And when I'm writing things or posting things or reading things, I don't know if it's really the same as socializing. It's kind of strange. And a lot of people, I think, are spending hours and hours a day, you know, posting and reading and all this, and they think they're having social interaction or something, but they're really not. And the idea that, you know, you're part of a community or something, you're really not. It's really kind of absurd in a lot of ways. And the truth is, you know, they talk about the product. You know, when you're on Facebook, you're not just looking at products or reading advertising or being given certain messages. The truth is that you're the product, and people don't realize that. Facebook is selling you to advertisers, and Facebook knows a lot about you because you've given, first of all, demographic information about yourself voluntarily, your age and where you went to school and a bunch of other things. But you've also put in, likes on things. You've said things that you like and things that you don't like. And so when they're doing marketing, they're selling you. They're selling your eyeballs and saying to companies and advertisers, look, we can get you extremely targeted people, and we're going to send our message, you know, your message to him or to her. And this is not just going to be a random advertisement. I mean, I can't believe on television how many times I've seen advertising for pickup trucks, and I'm never going to buy a pickup truck. But here in Facebook, they can target an advertisement directly to me that they know a lot of things about me, that I'm likely to have an interest in this product. And so they can spend this audience acquiring towards me and to other people like me that are the most likely people to be interested in the message. And so Facebook is not doing it for free because they like you so much. They're selling you, and you're part of what's going on. And, you know, in terms of using it and deluding yourself that you're, you know, friends with 2,000 people, it's just absolutely ridiculous. And it's incredible and sad, really sad, that this guy who killed someone who used to do the radio show in Mississippi, I guess, Tom, he...
I saw that story. I didn't know the guy when I saw the story.
Very pleased that you didn't know him. I'm really glad that you didn't. But, you know, the fact that he would do essentially some kind of, like, I don't know, a thrill killing for absolutely no reason, and that somehow that gives him some kind of social validation that he was posting it on Facebook, and he's become a bit of a celebrity, in the Andy Warhol sense, that he got 15 minutes of fame, you know? And now he's being called the Facebook killer, right? And we know his name.
Right.
That's something. And he eluded the police for 3 days, so he's sort of like a hero, you know. He's Bonnie and Clyde on the lam, you know. And Gary was telling me, and this will be right up Dino's alley, he was noticed by a McDonald's worker. That's pretty funny, going through the drive-thru.
Right.
Seriously, Tom, you never realized
that. He ordered French fries, and they were stalling on the French fries till the cops could get it.
Stalling on the French fries. I mean, you know, getting that's almost biblical, getting screwed by the McDonald's employee, who, by the way, Tom, I think that guy, whoever it was, that, I don't know if he's the manager or he's one of the workers, but he gets a $50,000 reward, apparently, for helping the guy get arrested. That's good. And
look at that.
That's a nice day at McDonald's, right? But
absolutely.
But the idea that somehow this person takes on some kind of cult status, you know, for what he did, which essentially was a senseless killing, but he had the forethought to do it on Facebook Live. I mean, when you look at news events, I was watching, there were riots again the other day in Berkeley, like 2 days ago over the weekend. They did these things about taxes or Trump releasing his tax returns or whatever. And everybody's got their phone recording. That's just the way it goes now. And that Dr. Dow getting yanked off the United Airlines flight,
yep,
that was captured in 15 different angles, Tom. Literally. I mean, when I used to watch television, they had I Love Lucy when I was a kid, you know. I think that was, what, 2 cameras, 3 cameras? That was a revolution at the time, you know.
And what?
Here.
You know who came up with it, right?
I think it was them, right? Desi Arnaz or no?
Desi Arnaz.
Yeah, yeah.
Desi Arnaz.
He was way.
Desi Arnaz. I'll tell you something. He did two things. One, he came up with the idea of filming the shows with 3 cameras and then editing
Genius.
Them together later.
Oh, brilliant.
Rather than doing it live the way they did The Honeymooners, another live sitcom.
Right.
The other thing was that he, in negotiating the contract with him and Lucille Ball, rather than taking the money they could have gotten, they said, we'll just take the films of the shows. We'll take the rights to that.
Genius.
And CBS at the time thought that had no value.
Yeah.
So they thought they were getting one over on Desi Arnaz.
Yeah, that reminds me of...
Turned out Desi Arnaz was very, very, very smart.
Well, a very astute businessman, but I recall that that's the same story with George Lucas with Star Wars. That he said, you know, you don't have to pay me the director's salary, and I'll trade it as long as I can own the characters, and I can own the marketing of you know, toys and and publish.
Right.
I mean, and I think Fox at the time thought he was the biggest schmuck that there ever was. You know, that he, you know, they handed over something worthless to him basically, but obviously Star Wars sold more toys than anyone else. But the thing that Desi Arnaz came up with in terms of 3 cameras, we literally now have that Dr. Dow incident covered by 15 cameras, where literally there's one person who was sitting behind him who sees him in his chair being talked to by the police, refusing to leave his chair. And then there's another person as he's being dragged down the aisle. That's the most common one. Then there's another video of him getting back on the plane afterwards somehow, bleeding profusely and pacing around. And I mean, this is sort of the new reality. And if we don't post it on social media, then it's almost as though it didn't happen. It almost becomes real at that point. And in terms of my experience now, and the reason I talk about this in the context of criminal law, I mean, you've got to recognize now as any kind of thing that you do wrong is most likely going to be captured by 5 different cameras. I was reading how when you go into a store, you go down the street, and you're in any major or minor city of any size or any type, you're being recorded every day. Dozens and dozens and hundreds of times. And so, I mean, if the most mundane thing happens, it's going to be captured by a camera. And if not, you know, fixed cameras, it's going to be someone who, you know, witnesses what's happening and starts filming it. That's their first reflex. Police are going to have body cameras almost, you know, many of them do already, but this is going to be something that's universal. And then you see the whole social aspect where in these incidents that have happened at schools or whatever, or these fights between students and fights with other people and teachers, all kinds of crazy nonsense, you know, everything is now on video. And this is a function that went back to the Rodney King video, which I think, you know, really ushered in a new era because at the time, nothing like that had really happened before. Now, most likely, Rodney King would have just been another sucker who got, you know, beat up by the police and made a complaint that no one paid any attention to. But the fact that this happened out on the street outside of someone's window and that person had a good quality video camera and set it up and recorded it, and then, you know, this thing was transmitted at the time. We didn't have the internet, but it was transmitted by the different media outlets and whatnot. That changed the whole calculus of what happened, and it made the story that King said about being beaten up by the cops more plausible and more believable because he had proof. He had the video itself. And that is something now in our society that's absolutely everywhere. And the idea that these things now are so inexpensive, that's one of the other big factors of the technology becoming simpler and smaller, where a video camera is so tiny it's part of a telephone. That is, you know, the phone itself is only a few hundred dollars, and it's within the reach of the cost of most consumers, that this is something that tons and tons of people, if not almost universally, are walking around with in their pocket. And then the fact that it can be transmitted so easily, and we have these kinds of things like social media. When I hear the leaders of Facebook talking about how they're going to regulate this, or they're going to control it in some ways, I have to say that that's just not true. I don't think they can. I don't think it's possible. And it's probably not a good thing even if they could, but they can't. The genie is very much out of the bottle. And so I would just say to people in general, you have to think much more carefully about what you post and what you say and what you do. And you have to think about who you are and how much you have to lose. Because there is a world of people that are going to remember all this stuff. And when you start putting yourself out in the public sphere, and maybe, I don't know if you run for office, that would be a one thing to do, but in general, if you're applying for work or you're doing other kinds of things, as has happened to me, and someone is about to hire me and they say, wait a second, I see what you posted on Facebook, and I'm not going to hire someone who doesn't like President Obama. I've literally gotten that. Or I'm not going to hire somebody who's a misogynist. I've gotten that too. Or I'm not going to hire someone who's associated with the Tom Likas show. I've gotten that too. And I feel strong enough in my life that I don't mind dealing with that. And if someone says to me, I'm not going to hire you because you're associated with XYZ, I say, kiss my ass, don't hire me, fine. But there are a lot of people in this world that may not be as in as strong a position to be able to do that. And they might lose important jobs, or they might lose important work. And that is something that people have to really consider. And it is stunning. I think we're living in a historical moment right now that this guy posted this murder, and it's gotten world attention. And I think we're going to see this kind of thing happening now more and more. And if it became commonplace, like literally, that Facebook Live has murders every couple of days, and people are like watching these, like we used to watch car chases in Los Angeles, you know, with the police and all this. If it becomes normal that people are getting murdered, or women are being raped, or people are being tortured on Facebook Live, then we literally have come into some sort of dystopia. I remember there were movies like this where there were murders and so forth, and people would watch them. And there was one movie with Richard Dawson. He was the guy who used to do Family Feud.
Family Feud.
Remember there was a movie, Tom, and they were doing like these gladiator fights or whatever. And that was like that. What was that? Running Man?
Running Man.
Does Mike, you are the man. The guy knows everything. Any media thing, yeah. Mike is right there. So anyway, that movie, Running Man or whatever, I mean, that was kind of talking about this dystopian future where that's how people were entertained in the future. So we're going to get to a place someday where Tom, you and I are hanging out, and I say, hey, let's turn on the internet. Let's turn on Facebook and see today's murder. And you go, yeah, that's cool. Let's see. Oh, look at this guy. He's using a chainsaw, you know? Unbelievable. Unbelievable. This is how we'll
entertain
ourselves.
Hang on a second, Adam. We got to take a break.
Okay.
We got to take a break here.
I want to watch a chainsaw murder, Tom. What channel is that?
I'll try to hook that up. I'm sure it's on one of them.
All right, thanks.
All right, this is, of course, our good friend, criminal defense attorney Adam Sachs. If you have a question for Adam, call him now at 901-3000-TOM. That's the number. 901-3000-TOM. Dial Adam right now. 901-3000-8. 6-6.
The entire Tom Likas experience in your pants.
Get the app now.
901-3000-TOM.
This is the Tom Likas Show.
Oh, yeah, the Tom Likas Show. Adam, while we have a moment here, tell everybody how they can get in touch with you.
Well, you can call me toll-free at 1-800-340-7320. That's 1-800-340-7320. You can check me out on Facebook. Haha, Facebook. But I'm still in jail for several more days, so I won't be able to respond. I think I'm getting out in another 3 days. You can check me out on the regular internet, which is unregulated at this point, www.adamlawyer.com. And you can send me an email, adam@adamlawyer.com.
All right, let's go to Yusuf in Ontario, California. Yusuf, you're on the Tom Likas Show with our friend Adam Sachs.
What's up, Papa? What's going on, Adam?
Hey, Yusuf, what's up?
Hey, what's up, you guys? Hey, I just put through because I had some information for you. You were talking about seeing, like, live murders,
yeah,
rapes, and, like, torturings, and, like, people being skinned alive, and all that stuff, like, in the future. Actually,
the future is
right
now.
You go to MundoNarcos.com. I guess it's M-U-N-D-O. It's one word, M-U-N-D-O, and Narco, N-A-R-C-O.com. And you click on videos, and it shows the Juarez cartel, the Sinaloa cartel, like, battling each other and, like, beheading each other's, like, women and mothers and, like ripping babies out of, like, girls' stomachs and chopping their heads off and, like,
literally,
cutting chicks' heads off. With, like, a small pocket knife.
This looks like...
taking, like, 2 hours to do it.
I think I've got it, but it looks like it's in Spanish or something, eh?
Yeah, but I'm just saying, like, you could actually, like, it's the real thing. Like, you can actually, like, watch that now. You don't have to wait till, like, Running Man future, so...
I understand. When I was a teenager, they were talking about snuff. And that was supposed to be this kind of, like, a video where they, like, have sex with a woman and kill her. And these were supposed to be made, like, in the jungles somewhere in South America or something, and they were bouncing off satellite dishes or whatever, right? And so, obviously, that's gone mainstream. If you're able to look at these narco videos, and this is also true of ISIS, because I think the thing you just talked about where they killed a woman and cut out the fetus and raped it or something, that is something that had happened lately and was on video. And obviously, there's videos of beheadings and so forth. So this is a whole subgenre, right? I mean, this is the wave of the future.
It's actually right. Yeah, it's right now.
I know, but when you talk about it, we make it sound like, you know, this is something that's gonna happen or whatever, right? So I guess you're pointing out that we don't have to wait so long for it to gonna happen. It looks like it's part of our current culture already, right?
Yusuf, thank you. Adam,
Tom,
how can people get in touch with
by
you?
By the way, one more thing. I seriously, Tom, this is a real website. I'm looking at it. And if you check it out, you're going to wonder if this is real because these are really grotesque pictures. And apparently maybe they are real. Unbelievable. Anyway.
I'll get right to that.
On that fine note, you can reach me toll-free at 1-800-340-7320. That's 1-800-340-7320. And send me an email, adam@adamlawyer.com.
There you go. And by the way, if you missed your chance to call into Adam, don't worry. He'll be back, as he always is. The next appearance from Adam Sachs is going to be Tuesday at 6 p.m. Pacific Time, 9 p.m. Eastern Time.
Don't let your smartphone be a dumbass. Download the Tom Likas app now.
901-3000-TOM. This is the Tom Likas Show.
From the New Normal Newsroom, it's news for guys. I'm Gary Zeno.
Yes.
Pace University sued by a student who claims officials did nothing to stop his ex-girlfriend from making bogus rape accusations.
You know, this is cool because this is pushback, and you better be careful when these rape claims are put forward. Obviously, rape claims should be taken seriously, but it looks like in this case... it wasn't, and this was a bogus case, and it kind of ruined this kid's reputation.
Right. I mean, anybody can make these accusations against anybody else. You got to have a way to suss them out, and somebody should be responsible should they be making false claims.
Exactly.
Pace could be facing some trouble.
Pace?
The greatest university in the world anyway.
Yeah, I don't know much about Pace because I don't think they have a football team.
Well, they might. If they do, it's probably not good.
Well, we'll see.
Right now.
Pace is the place.
A new study shows that a funny thing happens when women begin to out-earn their husbands. Here's Dino with the details, because
well,
I don't understand this at all.
Well, I'll tell you what happens. They go out and get new lift kits for their Jeeps.
No, that's not what it says. It says for some reason their political views change.
Yeah, they become more conservative, which... Basically, if you think about it, that's what happens to a lot of people. When they get money, they want to hold on to it, so they take more conservative views.
So when it's your wife's money, essentially, she's earning it. you then become more conservative?
Yeah, you want to keep it.
That's really weird. I would think you just become more like, you know, laid back. Enjoy yourself. Let the money roll in.
If she, believe me.
Yeah, if she's bringing home the bacon, I'm frying it up.
Believe me, I'm going to let Oprah do whatever she wants.
Right. You guys could enjoy some good foods together.
I don't care about the Weight Watchers as much, you know.
Donuts.
Yep. Cake. Ice creams, chocolates.
Just a day in the life of Oprah and Dito. You could sit on her lap.
Definitely. I'll tell Santa what I want. Hi, Mrs. Santa.
Oh, no. A special ed teacher, 23 years old, who had marijuana edibles and stolen property in her car is arrested for having sex with a 17-year-old student. Come on.
She's not bad either, I got to say.
Right.
Right?
Edibles.
What? Right. I mean, where's the problem?
She's okay, but yeah.
Oh, stop it. Oh, yeah, she's a little bit bigger.
Yeah.
I got to cruise down.
What was the stolen property, you know?
No, but I'm sure it was good.
You sure it was good? Yeah.
Aren't you?
Vegas hoping to stem HIV and hepatitis. You can get your needle out of a vending machine now. Nice clean one. We'll never play, you know, plastic wrapped in the whole thing.
Yeah, imagine that. Like next to a place where you could get Coke, a Diet Coke and everything, now you can get a clean needle. So,
is everybody moving to the junk now that the pills are too expensive and hard to get?
Well, not that I know, but just in case, you know, if you could have an Oxy and it would be between $20 and $30 a pill, and you'd need to get about $100 worth of those bad boys for the price of just a mere $10 of heroin.
Right.
So that's the problem.
All right. Just use the machine, get yourself a nice clean needle.
Right. Yeah.
Plenty more newsforguys.com. And, of course, you can find our podcast at GaryandDino.com. From the New Normal Studios in Burbank, we're back to the Tom Likas Show right after this.
This is the New Normal.
I'll tell Santa what I want.